Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Out the First. It's March 25th, 2024. I'm Ryan Balaji. Thanks for being here. It's a Monday show today. It's going to be an interesting week for me. I'm going to be traveling down to South Carolina tomorrow afternoon, so we'll try to do a show tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, I'm going to be playing at Old Barnwell. So we're going to have a great time there. I'll share some photos and some imagery and all that good stuff. If you want to follow me on X and Insta, I'll be on both of those sharing pictures probably. And then on Thursday, I'll be playing golf with Tiernan Byrne from Club Choice Ireland, who was a brilliant, amazing host for us. So if you ever need anything in Ireland, go talk to Tiernan at clubchoiceireland.com, along with Brendan Sweeney for French Lick Resort. And then on Friday, and for about a week, I'll be in Myrtle Beach. So we'll be doing shows from down there, but there may be one day this week where it just doesn't happen for whatever reason. And you probably can figure out what that reason is. So we've got plenty to talk about. We had a pretty full slate of stuff that happened on Sunday. Wound up getting a playoff. It looked like for a while we might have two playoffs, and we wound up just getting the one. And then you had we could have had three, actually. It was really close to being three for three on the day. So we'll go over those results a little bit here. Before we do that, we're brought to you by our friends at 20s. Check them out, 20s.co. Use the promo code GolfNewsNet25 and save 25% of your first order. Their spring stuff looks great. All the capsules are really cool. As I've said before in the show, I'm a big fan of the Stang Quarter Zip and the Connor Anorak. They're both wonderful jackets. I've become more of a jacket guy the older I get. But check them out at 20s.co. Okay, so we got three tournaments that were in the book. Well, four tournaments that were in the books, but one was much earlier for me compared to the other three, and that was the Porsche Singapore Classic on the DP World Tour. If you listen to our golf betting podcast, The Press, you heard me talk on our Wednesday show about Jesper Svensson, who's been playing some great golf. He's just 14 starts into his DP World Tour career, and he is now a winner on that tour. Wound up winning the Porsche Singapore Classic in a really interesting final round. I was trying to kind of keep up with it while watching March Madness on Saturday night, and was not especially successful because I fell asleep, but it was really tight down the stretch. You had Kierdak Oppy Barnrat, who wound up getting to a playoff with Jesper Svensson. They have a three-hole playoff. Svensson wins the playoff. You had Paul Casey in there. You had Shane Lowry in there. It was a good tournament, and that's great for the Asian audience that they get to watch something that good and watch it in a normal time zone as opposed to me watching it at, you know, 1 in the morning, scrolling up and down leaderboard waiting for something to happen. So that's kind of funny. Here in the States, three tournaments. First to wrap up was the Valspar Championship down in Innisbrook. And it was real. I mean, I feel like people sleep on the Valspar every year because, as I've mentioned before, and again, not plugging our betting podcast, but we talked about this on that show, Innisbrook's Copperhead course is just a kind of course that does not favor anybody. Almost kind of like TPC Sawgrass. Different setup, different reasons why it doesn't favor anybody, because it's penal to everyone. It's very demanding, requires a lot of great approach play, requires good short game. It requires more good short game than a lot of places on the PGA Tour. So you can get by without being really long. And that's what you got in terms of a leaderboard come Sunday. I mean, you have Keith Mitchell out there who hits it pretty far. You have Peter Malnati, Seamus Power. Those guys aren't particularly long. Neither is Mac Hughes. Then you had Cam Young. You had Cam Champ. You had some very long players in those guys. Keith Mitchell and Seamus Power had a very rough day together on Sunday. That was unfortunate for them. Mac Hughes, too. It just wasn't the best. And you wound up with a battle in the, not the last group, but the two in front of that for the title. Cam Young was a hole ahead of Peter Malnati. And it was a compelling battle because it's a contrast. I love contrasts of styles, very contrasting style between Cam Young and Peter Malnati. Peter Malnati, as they said during the telecast, had never made the FedEx Cup playoffs despite winning on the tour in 2015. And he's never played in the Masters. And you got Cam Young, who's the 2022 Rookie of the Year. And he's had so many close calls. This was his seventh runner-up finish, which was, as Justin Rae said, the biggest or the highest number of runner-up finishes by a player without a win on the PGA Tour in 40 years. That's crazy. I mean, the guy gets there often, but did not get it done. And he cost himself dearly, really. I mean, he gave himself a decent look on 17 on the par 3 in the snake pit. I guess that's part of the, yeah, snake pit. And missed that birdie. And then on 18, pulled a drive, tried his best to hook a wedge onto the green close. He got it on the green, which I thought was impressive enough. But he wound up three-putting, dropping a shot. And as behind him, Malnati's hitting in the fairway bunker on 18 and probably started sweating bullets thinking, I got to make a par from here somehow. That opens up a two-shot cushion. Malnati had a decent lie in the bunker, winds up getting the ball up to the green, over the flagstick, 15, 20 feet for birdie. Cozies it down to an inch, puts the mark down, taps it in, and he is a winner on the PGA Tour for the first time in nearly 9 years. More than eight, you know, 8.5 years, basically. Right in the middle there. And we'll come back to him in a minute, but that was my favorite win of the week. And we'll come back to that in a second, because I want to talk about what days like that mean for somebody, I think, or what it means to me, because it means something to him. And then on the LPGA, right around the same time, they were trying to wrap them up pretty concurrently. You had the Fir Hills Savory Pac Championship in the Los Angeles area. Nelly Korda was two up with two to go. It was really tough scoring conditions out there. It was very windy in the Los Angeles, south of Los Angeles area. And that part of the area can get especially windy. For folks who have ever talked about or heard people talk about playing the Trump National Los Angeles course that's public, you've heard that course is extremely tight and very windy. And it's in a similar part of the world, it can get very windy down there. And it did. And Nelly winds up in a playoff with Ryan O'Toole on 9-under total. And you're thinking, all right, here we go. She's going to blow it. And just like what happened at the event in Bradenton, you know, the LPGA event, the drive-on, she winds up playing her way into a playoff with Lydia Ko because of a great final couple of holes. You know, an incredible eagle, great birdie, winds up winning. She kind of fell into the playoff this time, but once overtime happened, that thing was over. And Ryan O'Toole really never stood a chance because Nelly Korda made a, 15-foot birdie putt on the first playoff hole to lock up her 10th LPGA Tour win. She is now number one in the world again. She took it from Lilia Vu. She was number two heading into the week. And it seemed like, it seems to me so far at least, that Nelly Korda might be realizing she could be this special. She could be an incredible player. She could be a dominant player. And she's had looks at it. She's had her major. You know, there are times where it feels like her major opportunity. It feels like there are times where you go, all right, well, how can you ever stop this player? She's incredible. She plays great. And then she goes through these stretches where it just seems like she takes her eyes off the prize and doesn't play as well and then comes back. This season, again, a couple tight ones, a couple really tough golf tournaments for different reasons. Finds a way into extra session, wins the extra session, has two wins on the year already. Six events on the LPGA schedule, and she hasn't even played all six. So she's having a great year. She's already basically player of the year unless someone wins. You know, she needs a major to lock it up. But if she won, let's say, the Chevron, she's a player of the year probably. This thing's over before we get started. And that could open the door for her to maybe one of the more dominating seasons we've seen in a long time on the LPGA. I don't want to get too far into hyperbole because Lilia Vu just had a multiple major winning season last year and was tremendous, tremendous. And now she's dealing with injury and being ill and not in the best position at the moment. And she's going to get better and come back. But when Nelly Korda is at her best, eyeballs are on her. People are interested in her. They want to watch her play. And it would be good for the LPGA to have her have one her best season, frankly, this year. And so far, she's off to that run. So congratulations to her on the win. And then on the Champions Tour, not too far away in Newport Beach, they were having the Hogue Classic, and you had a pretty jumbled leaderboard. That tournament tends to kind of, not devolve into chaos, but tends to be a pretty tight one. And Patrick Harrington looked like he was on cruise control. Thing was his. Birdie's 15, you're like, all right, it's over, here we go. Double bogey 16. You think, okay, well, now he's going to choke it up to Tung Chai Jai Di, who's playing pretty well. out there on the champions. And then Harrington birdies 17, and then he birdies 18, and he wins the golf tournament. So wins for the seventh time on the champions. And I appreciate Steve Alker. I appreciate Stephen Ames. Both those guys are great players, but they don't generate the same kind of attention as for this tour as when star players, major championship winners win. So when Steve Stricker's dominating, people are interested. When Patrick Harrington wins, people are interested. When Miguel Angel Jimenez wins, they're interested because of his personality. But you need that mixture. You need that mixture of established players who won or were big names on the PGA Tour, and then those players like Ames, who did win on the PGA Tour, he won a Players, Ames, Alker, those guys who didn't really have much to show for their PGA Tour careers by comparison, and they're thriving on this circuit. That's I like that mix. So good for Harrington to get the win. Good for the tour to kind of keep moving forward. They're going to stay in the California area. So they're playing in Mission Hills, where they used to play what is now the Chevron Championship. Craft Nabisco, A&A Inspiration, Dinosaur, take your pick. That'll be the Gallery Classic this week. And the LPGA is getting ready to go into Arizona. They're going to play the Ford Championships, the first year for this tournament. And that is in the Arizona area, so it's nice to have them back in the Arizona market. They used to have a tournament there at Superstition Mountain for a long time that was really well supported by the community. That went away because of sponsorship issues. Now they're back. And they got a big title sponsor in Ford, which is really cool. I'm happy to see that again. And then the PGA Tour is in Houston. And I was trying to rack my brain about this yesterday afternoon or yesterday morning, I should say. I was trying to remember what tournament is next on the PGA Tour because I knew it's not the Valero Texas Open, and because that's the week before the Masters, and it's going to be for a while. But I didn't know what was going to be in the middle. I was like, are we playing the Zurich Classic this week? And then I went to go look at the field. I was like, oh, Houston, that's right. Because Houston was last played in 2022 in the fall. Tony Finau won. Then they chose not to play it last year because they were moving to this part of the schedule. Get away from the fall. Take the place of the WGC match play, which would have been in this spot. That's gone. So you have that now, the Houston Open in its place. And then you have the CJ Cup at the Byron Nelson. That's merging two tournaments, basically. So you have in the Texas swing, you have your four tournaments, right? Now you don't have five. And you have four still in that part around the Masters and leading into the PGA. But it's a little bit different makeup this week. So they're at Memorial Park Golf Course inside of Houston proper. I like the golf course. Tom Doak did it. Brooks Koepka was the player consultant, architect, helper kind of guy, if you'll remember that. I do like the golf course. I mean, it's really a Doak course, and it's a fun one. You have 10 of the world top 50 competing. You got Scheffler in the field, so that's box office enough for me to pay attention. Finau's the defending champion. Zalatoris is playing. You got Sahith Theegala playing this week. So you got a decent little field for this event. None of those guys are really going to want to play next week because that's the week before the Masters. Most players don't do that. Got a couple of chances to still get into the Masters. You can win one of the next two PGA Tour events. You can also get into the top 50 in the official world golf ranking by the end of this week. So if you play well in Houston and find a way to creep into the top 50, looking at like a Tom Hoagie kind of guy, then you can get an invite to the Masters if you don't have one already. But that's it. They could still do a special invite, but I don't see any reason to do a special invite at this point. So there's not going to be one of those kind of last-minute opportunities, I don't believe. That all said, I want to come back to Peter Malnati's win. It got me. It got me right in the feels, as the kids say these days. And I said this on Twitter to someone who responded to me. I think most people are this way. I like rooting for the underdog. I'm an underdog. My entire professional career in golf has been as an underdog with no resources, no money, definitely no money, and to start at least. It's hard. It's really hard to have a dream, not have everything on your side, try to figure out the best way to exploit your talent or your capability, and just struggle. And in my case, it's a little different, right, for Peter Malnati. He's won already. He won 2015, but it had been nearly 9 years. And he's just hanging on and hanging on and hanging on and hanging on. And my story is a little bit different, which is not really important. But I can really empathize with trying to fight and balance and chase your dream, but be a good parent and try to do the best for your children. Do right by them and care and put all the effort that you should put into being a parent and a spouse into your work and not just burn out and want to just put your head in your hands and just scream. And he got that day yesterday. That was really special to me. That was really cool to me. It was really cool. And what the moment that got me was when he, after he had marked, you know, the 3-inch putt that's left, I think it dawned on him, you know, it finally hit him. Hey, this is happening. I'm going to win today. And you could see him tear up, and, you know, most people do, you know, they put their head in their hands or their hand in front of their face or over their eyes, and you could see the tears starting to come down. And then the very nice interview with Kira Dixon on NBC after the fact. I mean, she could have just put a mic in his face and been, how about it, man? And that's pretty much what all she had to do for a guy like Peter Malnati, who was talkative and very friendly and just a nice guy. And he just thought about, you know, he keeps saying it's amazing, but then he thanked his caddy, thanked his wife, thanked his children for figuring out a way to let him do this and struggle through it and find ways through the frustrations of raising children on the road or time apart and trying to be successful together. He's trying to support her career. She's got a PhD in writing about sports performance, and she's accomplished in her own right. It's not just all about yourself. And then to know he gets to go to the Masters, gets to go on all the signature events. And by the way, after having the controversy of getting invited to play Pebble Beach as a board member, not as someone who qualified for the tournament by the criteria, but had to fill the field and because they needed 80 players, and they put him in it. And that drew a lot of ire. Well, he's earned his way in now. He's earned his way into the remaining signature tournaments. He's in the remaining majors of the year. His life is forever different. And he can make it even more different if he can, you know, sew up an incredible year and maybe get a great FedEx Cup finish. He's in the playoffs. I mean, that's for sure. And he's got 2 years. He doesn't have to worry about playing out of the 126 and beyond category, which he's done in the past for a number of years. He was fine this year. He's in the 125. But for him to get all of that in one moment, and it'll keep coming back to him because of the goodies that you get from winning. I mean, he's going to get guaranteed $50,000 paydays, basically, at the remaining signature events. He's going to get guaranteed prize money for being in the FedEx Cup first two events. If he gets to the Tour Championship, that might be tougher. That's tougher to do. But if he can do that, he gets an enormous payday. I mean, huge amount of money. And I know from that we talk about money a lot right now, but for a guy that hasn't made a whole lot of it compared to his peers, hasn't been reveling in it as much as a Scottie Scheffler or Rory McIlroy or the stars who get access to free money hand over fist, this is a huge deal. And I'm very, very happy for him, very excited for him. It's cool to have days like this. You need days like this. And this one, and no offense to Matthew Pavon or Jake Knapp or other guys who have won this year that were unlikely, they're cool stories. Chris Kirk was unlikely. He's a 5-time PGA Tour winner. He was unlikely. But Nick Dunlap, unlikely. This one felt a little bit different, and I think it's because you could see that he cared. You could see that everyone around him cared, that it mattered. And they rallied around him and were so happy for him that I'll never get tired of that. I will never get tired of that. You know, I know that there, and I've probably done some ratings complaining about stories like this because, you know, having relatively unknown or unheralded players winning, because that doesn't make the public watch. And that's true. And the ratings for this might be terrible, although the ratings for this are typically surprisingly okay. But it, so be it. That's fine for weeks like these. You need this. You need weeks like this. Now, we just had 2 weeks where Scottie Scheffler certified himself once again as the absolute best player on the planet, and he could do it again this week in Houston. That this would be a great part of that sandwich if that happens. That's totally fine too. But I'm always going to root for someone who is realizing their dream, someone who's fought so hard for so long. And you know, no offense to Jake Knapp, he's fought hard too. I mean, he was a nightclub bouncer. Matthew Pavon fought hard on the DP World Tour just to get to the PGA Tour. Nick Dunlap's life's just starting. I mean, he's been great, but he's worked so hard to become the kind of golfer that he is. None of the surprise winners didn't work hard. They didn't have, it wasn't just handed to them. They weren't lazy and then just decided to win one day. None of those types of things. I think because someone like Peter Malnati is so forward and emotional, and you want that. People want that. People want to see successful people, especially underdogs, be happy. Because, frankly, most people don't get that day. Most people don't ever get a day like that where you have even 100 people clapping for you and happy about something you accomplished and wanting to shake your hand and wanting to put their hand in yours if it's your spouse or your child and say, I'm so proud of you and thank you and whatever it is, congratulations. I mean, I'm kind of welling up thinking about that kind of stuff. That does not happen to many people in the course of their lives. Maybe your wedding day is the day that happens. Maybe the day you graduate from high school or college, and even then, it's really just for your family, right? There aren't thousands of people cheering your name. So I think to be able to try to put yourself in that person's shoes, that's inspirational. That's really cool. And I got a little, I know the guys at Shotgun Start like to call him Peppy Peter. I got a little pep in my step because of that win. And I kind of needed that. I feel a little run down, feel a little ill. Got some stuff we're dealing with on the TV channel, on the website. And there's all kinds of stuff that's super stressful and difficult. And then I know that's his job, is super stressful and difficult. And he's dealing with the board stuff on the PGA Tour. And he found himself earlier in the week meeting Yasir Al-Rumayyan, and then on Sunday becomes a two-time PGA Tour winner, wins $1.512 million. There's no way you could have told him 2 years ago that was going to be in his day planner for this week. And that, you know, knowing those days are possible, that's what keeps a lot of people going, that those days are possible and what you fight for and why you fight for it. So that got me, and hopefully it got you too. And hopefully that's why you watch golf. I mean, I know people watch golf to see incredible players play, and we got that with Scottie Scheffler, and I love that too. I love seeing the best in the world assert themselves as not only a good person, but an incredible athlete. That's Scottie Scheffler too. I really like that. And I really like days like yesterday where that the underdog can win, and he may never do it again. He might flounder the rest of the year, might flop about, but at least for, and he was great. I mean, he didn't back into, I mean, Cameron Young helped him a little bit on the 18, but he still got it on the green at two. He still would have won by one. He did it. It wasn't handed to him. And for Cameron Young, I know he's got to be upset, but he gave an interesting quote where he said he kind of knew he didn't have it today and that he wasn't going to win. And that defeatist attitude, I think, is very concerning for a guy that is that talented. Someone's got to get him convinced that he can run through the tape, that he doesn't have to stop short, that he can run through it and just be him the whole way through, all 72 holes, pound the ball, hit it hard, go make some putts and go win golf tournaments. He can do it. I know he can do it. And it's really frustrating as someone who's, and I'm sure it's even more frustrating for him, of course, But to watch him play with the level of talent that he has and to just see those mistakes at the wrong time continue to kind of hurt him. And at the same time, he was beat. I mean, Malnati played great. So maybe a little of each. Maybe take a little solace in that the better player did wind up winning. But it's got to be frustrating to know it should have been you. Could have been you. And it's the seventh time it probably should have been you. So hopefully that's a step forward for him leading into the rest of the season. He's a good player. He's going to figure it out. All right, that's going to do it for us today on Two Out the First. Thanks so much for listening. I appreciate it. I'm going to take a little bit of a break of water, and then I'm going to go do our golf betting podcast, The Press. You can check that out if you'd like to listen to it. This week on the 19th hole golf show, Hughes Norton is my guest. So we've started doing a different kind of style of the 19th hole golf show, where it's really just a conversation. It could be 30 minutes, it could be 40 minutes, it could be an hour. It doesn't matter. But a conversation with someone that I think is really interesting in golf. Either I've met them, or I've played golf with them, or I'm just getting to meet them. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. And Hughes Norton was fascinating. He's Tiger Woods' first agent. He was Greg Norman's agent for a long time. He worked with Mark O'Meara, Curtis Strange. He's got a book out, it's a memoir called Rainmaker. And we were originally going to talk for 10, 12 minutes, you know, kind of an interview for GNN Radio. It wound up going a half hour because he was so interesting and engaging and gave great answers. And I think we were having a really good conversation. So I'm going to put that out. That'll be out today as well over on the 19th Hole Golf Show feed. You can check that out wherever you download your podcasts. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. Thanks so much for listening. I'm on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Balogi. Email Ryan at thegolfnewsnet.com. Golf Newsnet is on all of those services at the handle Golf Newsnet. We will be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Two Off the First.